Welcome to The Fantastic Four, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. This is the podcast that combines comics, cocktails, and conversation for your listening pleasure. I am your host, Brett Young, and with me this episode, his middle name is Mr. Fantastic, it's Chuck Dill. Welcome to the Fantastic Lounge, Chuck. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me. I've been a fan of the show since you started. I caught up on all the episodes, so it's wonderful to be part of the discussion.
Well, that's great to hear, and thanks for listening. And of course, I'd be remiss if we didn't start after you did a quick video tour of this amazing toy room. Do you have a name for it? I didn't even ask this.
Is there a specific? I call it the Comic Sanctuary.
The Comic Sanctuary. It's incredible. I know that a lot of people have probably described this in the past and everything, but it's wall to wall toys and posters and collectibles, and it's an incredible collection. And as I was telling Chuck earlier, I'm glad my 8-year-old's asleep, or he'd be like, what's this? Who's that? Who's this? What's this? Let me see that one. Let me see it. You know, we'd be here for hours doing that. So, but it's awesome. So
my nephews, this was a while ago, decades mm-hmm. ago. The younger nephew is autistic, and we brought him up to show him the room, told him he couldn't touch anything. So he would run from one end of it to the other and the next, and then sank to his knees and put his forehead on the floor and said, "This is a sad room." Because he wasn't
because
allowed
he couldn't
to touch
anything.
Couldn't touch anything. So
do you have at this point, do you have sort of some ones that are kind of sacrificial lambs? If like kids are over, you have a few that you're like, fine, you know, do as you will, or no, is that not a problem anymore?
No, my kids are all adults, and we were empty nesters for a while. A couple mm-hmm. of them came back, but I hope I'm out of that concern. But but my kids brought their cats with them when they moved back in, and I have to keep the door closed.
Yes, I can imagine. I can imagine. Oh my God, cats. Well, this is really cool. So what, okay, well, let's get on with the show before I was telling you beforehand, we could just talk about that room for about 2 hours, but let's get on with the show. So sometime ahead of recording each podcast, I ask my guests two things: choose an alcohol beverage or ingredient that they enjoy, and choose a comic book character they love. Based on these answers, I come up with a cocktail for us to create and choose a comic book to discuss. So Chuck, please tell our friends in the lounge your chosen ingredient and comic book character. Let's start with your character.
I gave you a couple choices to choose from, my top being Aquaman, but that would be problematic on the Fire and Water Network if you allowed me to have that one. So I
think Rob would have been fine with it, but I found one of your other characters more compelling. So yeah, go ahead, sorry.
My favorite Marvel character is actually Mr. Fantastic, and I don't know anyone who can say that same thing.
No, so why is he your favorite?
There are many different reasons. So I've always been a DC guy, except for the Fantastic Four. DC's always been my first, but due to running into them at a very youthful age, I make them an exception. I tend to like a leader character and an underdog character, which is why I like Aquaman. And Mr. Fantastic is always playing second banana to Torch and Thing. They're flashier, their personalities. So he tends to be the underdog. I always also love the smart guy character, like Brainiac 5 in the Legion. He's probably my favorite mm-hmm. Legionnaire. But I love the stories where you think the bad guy has won, and then you realize that Mr. Fantastic outthought them before the fight even started. Those are my favorite kind of stories, is touting him. And finally, of all the Marvel heroes, in my opinion, Mr. Fantastic is the most DC-like character.
Well, that's interesting. Why so?
He's got the scientist thing down. His name is silly, like a DC character
that's
would
true,
be.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have a lot of the personality flaws or quirks, or he didn't when I knew him, 60s and 70s. He was pretty straightforward, the hero. big quotes, and then all the personality went to Ben and Johnny. So I just ended up relating to this Mr. Fantastic guy because, I liked him more, and he was somebody I could see blending into DC really well.
Yeah, now that you say that, I can totally see that. You're right. It would blend well. And again, you're right about the silly name. Of course, they have Mr. Terrific, so they kind of one up him, Fantastic, terrific, whatever you need. So that's really cool. Yeah, I always liked him, and I thought he was, you're right, he was kind of the guy, sort of the guy in the background. And it's almost and it's kind of funny because you have other characters who have the same power as him that are viewed much sillier, like a Plastic Man or an Elongated Man. But he has that, and it's almost sort of an afterthought. Like the stretching is done almost to sort of make his life easier, like when he's in the lab, so he can stretch across the room, grab the test. You always show him grabbing the test tubes and everything. You rarely see him like sort of, like stretching his face out or something like that, or turning, or like, bending himself into the shape of a lamp or something like that in the room. He uses it more practically, I guess, than the other stretchy characters.
There's a school of thought about stretchy characters that I've heard before, that once you stretch the neck, you've lost your audience, or the character has become silly. And if you notice in the recent Fantastic Four movie, they never stretch Pedro Pascal's neck.
That's true. That's true. They didn't really stretch him, I
No.
mean, much at all. I mean, he had
No,
some of
no.
that, but they but yeah, even but you're right, but even in most Fantastic Four, it's usually at the torso. He's stretching, or the arms or the legs. It's not, you're right. It's not usually like the head poking around. Although the most recent run, they've done some sort of unique stuff with his ability, particularly when he basically turned his eyes into it was either a microscope or binoculars or something like that. So he stretched his eyeballs out and was sort of holding them in his hand like a pair of binoculars, which it's great in a comic. It would absolutely be horrific to see something like that in real life. But yeah, that's
I am loving Ryan North's current run on the FFF. And when the vampires all attacked, he found out they couldn't bite him, and he covered a whole building to protect everyone inside. I thought that was a great Mr. Fantastic moment. But usually stretching is seen as a silly power, but in the second Incredibles movie, Elastigirl had some really, really great moments, and I was like,
Absolutely.
this is how you do it. This is And nobody's laughing at her because she's kind of a badass in that movie.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. No, it's he's he was a great choice. As soon as you said him, it was a great choice. Now, obviously, when I started this podcast, a lot of people assumed it was a Fantastic Four, podcast. And of course, my first episode with Paul Kim was about the Thing too, so I sort of leaned into that a little bit. But I thought it was a good time to talk about Mr. Fantastic, especially with the movie coming out. Some synergy there and everything too. But I thought he was a great choice, and I'm really glad you picked him. So, and again, Mr. Fantastic, real name Dr. Reed Richards, first appearance, Fantastic Four, Volume 1, Issue 1, from August 1961, created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. And so we will get back to Dr. Richards. In the meantime, Chuck, why don't you tell us your beverage of choice?
I picked bourbon. I did pick bourbon, didn't
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
I?
I
Sorry,
hope
I'm
so.
not.
Otherwise,
I'm not
gonna have to
super.
change these notes really fast. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm not not super into the alcohol, but I like an old fashioned, and a Manhattan, so bourbon's good.
So it's more of a you prefer the bourbon with a with as a mixed drink, as opposed to you're not doing a lot of straight bourbon or just some bourbon over a cube or anything like that. Is that right? Okay, gotcha. Along those lines, we are going to do a perfect, what I think is a perfect fall cocktail to enjoy in any fancy pants situation, which is the Manhattan. But before we go into the recipe, I wanted to talk a little bit more about Manhattans in a segment I like to call Secret Porridgeons. So you get that, Chuck, the secret pour and porridges.
My
You got
sides
that.
hurt. My sides are stitching. They're hurt.
it never gets old. All right. So here is the origin, the secret origin of the Manhattan. And thank you to tastecocktails.com and spiritofyork.com and liquor.com for the research. So, as is the case with many cocktails, there are a few theories about how the Manhattan cocktail came about. The most popular of these is in the late 1880s, a Dr. Ian Marshall came up with a recipe for a party that was being held at the Manhattan Club in New York City, hosted by Lady Randolph Churchill, who is Winston Churchill's mother. However, it is now believed this is probably a myth because at the time, Lady Randolph Churchill was pregnant with Winston and at home in England, not partying in New York City. So another theory is a man only known as Black invented the cocktail at the famed Hoffman House in New York City. Whatever the truth is, the Manhattan Club still lays claim to the still lay, excuse me, the Manhattan Club still lays claim to the ownership of the recipe to this very day, and the cocktail is still available in most restaurants and bars all over the world. Now, the first known written mention of the Manhattan cocktail was in an article published in the Sunday Morning Herald in Orlean, New York, on September 1882. In case anybody's curious where Orlean, New York is, I looked it up. It's basically just north of central Pennsylvania near St. Bonaventure University, if anybody's familiar with that. They make the Final Four sometimes in basketball, so you may have heard of the school before. In this article, the ingredients of whiskey, vermouth, and bitters were mentioned, as well as the drink's name Manhattan. However, other names like the Jockey Club cocktail and Turf Club cocktail were mentioned, and this adds a bit to the confusion. Now, 2 years later, in 1884, O.H. Byron's book, The Modern Bartender's Guide, provides the first detailed recipe of the Manhattan cocktail as one pony of French vermouth, one pony of whiskey, 3 to 4 dashes of Angostura bitters, 3 dashes of gum syrup. Gum syrup is a type of simple syrup that contains gum arabic, which is a natural resin from an acacia tree. Now, if you're asking what's a pony, the double-sided liquid measuring tool you'll see most bartenders use, I'm sure anyone who's been to a restaurant or bar has probably seen this. It's usually a stainless steel hourglass shape to it, and it's used to measure out liquors. Now, usually one side is larger than the other, so you have usually a 2 ounce side and a 1 ounce side, or sometimes you have a 1.5 ounce side and a 3/4 ounce size. Now, the larger side is called the jigger shot, and the smaller side is called the pony shot. So most likely with this recipe, when they say one pony of French vermouth, that's probably 1 ounce of French vermouth. And then one pony of whiskey is probably 1 ounce of whiskey. So that's just an aside to make it a little clearer what that is. In the 1900s, the recipe went through many changes over the years. Gum syrup and absinthe were omitted, and Angostura bitters became more commonly used instead of orange bitters due to availability. Canadian whiskey also later became more prevalent in making this drink. This was due, of course, to Prohibition. Canadian whiskey was far more accessible. Even after Prohibition ended, many stuck with the recipe using Canadian whiskey, preferring its distinct, smooth taste. It's not clear exactly when bourbon whiskey became an ingredient of choice, but many believe that rye whiskey was the traditional ingredient used, although it's not really explicitly stated in some of the early recipes that we've covered. Whatever the case may be, some stick to bourbon as a base spirit as they prefer its mellower taste and more hints of sweetness. Now, a few variations on the Manhattan. You have the Rob Roy, which uses Scotch whiskey instead of regular whiskey. That's usually garnished with a cherry or lemon twist. You have the Dry Manhattan that uses dry vermouth instead of sweet vermouth, and that's usually garnished with a lemon twist. A Perfect Manhattan is usually equal parts dry and sweet vermouth and garnished with a cherry or lemon twist. So that is the overall secret origin of the Manhattan. So Chuck, there's Mr. Fantastic right on Chuck's desk. There you go. I see him right there. So it's happy hour now. So Chuck, let's make a drink. I call this Smokin' Reed Richards, which will make sense when we're talking about the comic book. Chuck, tell our friends what we need.
We got 2 ounces of bourbon whiskey, 1 ounce of sweet vermouth, 3 dash of aromatic bitters, and Luxardo cherries or regular maraschino cherries.
Yes, so very good. So what you're going to do, short and sweet. So you're going to pour the bourbon, the sweet vermouth, and the dashes of bitters over ice into a mixing glass. Stir it thoroughly. You're going to strain that into a chilled cocktail glass, either neat or on the rocks, or up like in a martini glass or a coupe. And then you're going to garnish it with a cherry. And there you go. You have your Manhattan. Now you always stir. Most likely when you're doing a bourbon drink, you want to stir as opposed to shake, because the shake, it's a phrase, it's called bruising the alcohol. Basically what it does is then you get a lot more, it waters it down from the ice crystals. So normally with whiskey drinks, you always want to make sure you just give it a nice, easy stir. But that aside, Chuck and I are going to put on our evening wear and try our Manhattans. You all can drink along and enjoy this promo break.
Hello, my name is Chuck Dill, and I've loved listening to orchestral movie soundtracks since I was 12 years old in 1982. When most teenagers were rocking out to those great 1980s hits, I was listening to John Williams, James Horner, and John Barry. And now I want to talk about it. Unfortunately, I don't have any education or ability in music.
But I do. I'm Dr. Bob.
And I'm Dr. Husband.
We also love genre movies, but we also hate money. So we got terminal degrees in voice performance.
So please join us as we meet once a month to discuss movies with the music that sends us to Thrillsville on the Nerd Orchestra Podcast.
And we are back. Chuck and I stood out on the Fantasta Lounge rooftop outpost to look pensively, drink in hand, at the night skyline. So now that we've had a chance to taste our Smokin' Reed Richards, what do you think, Chuck? What'd you think of it?
It's very good. I mean, like I said, I'm not a big alcohol drinker, so I can't sit here and say what it smelled like or anything, but I did enjoy it.
Yeah. Now, what type of bourbon did you use?
I don't know. My wife made it for me. I told you already offline, I think. She's the one that does the physical objects. I can handle the spreadsheets.
Very good. That's awesome. That's awesome. Now, I think I'm looking at your cocktail right now. So it looks like she served it neat. Is that correct? Unless
yes.
the cube is melted.
Yes.
Okay. So she served it neat, almost a snifter. It's not quite a snifter. It's sort of a cross between that and a coupe glass. So it's very cool. It looks very, especially with Reed right in front of it. It looks very, and the wood, you got, some wood around it. It looks very classy. It's just what we wanted.
I wanted to take a picture, advantage of my screen freezing to get Reed on there. And I thought I would trip you up, but you handled it really well.
Yeah, no, I saw you moving around when I was doing the Secret Origin. And I was like, nope, not going to trip me up, buddy. Yeah, so the Manhattan, Manhattan, again, is something you're going to have one or two of in an evening. I find it, more enjoyable as the, now that the weather's turning, it's something to enjoy it at an occasion or a nice dinner or something like that. I think it's definitely something I think you want to have a little bit of food when you're having these, because it is a strong cocktail. Depending on that, I used Woodford Reserve, which is a single batch bourbon, for this. So you get some of that sweetness from the bourbon, and obviously with the sweet vermouth really mellows it out as opposed to just drinking straight bourbon. So I recommend a bourbon or a rye is fine. I wouldn't go with anything too high proof because you're going to lose some of that burn. So I think a bourbon is perfect with it. If you want it even more mellow, as I mentioned, the Secret Origin, like a blended whiskey or like a Canadian whiskey, is really easy drinking. The bitters adds a little bit of, again, of that bitter taste. You get some bite from the bourbon, and then it sort of finishes off very smoothly because of the sweet vermouth. I like to use Luxardo cherries just because they have a little more flavor and they pair very well with the bourbon. But you can use any kind of cherry, or if you prefer, a lemon twist is fine as well. A little bit of the citrus is it works well with it as well. So we talked about that. Anything else you want to say about your Manhattan? Or should I ask you, does your wife want to say anything about the Manhattan?
She probably would be the more interesting guest to have, yes. But I do want to say I'm upset at you. We're standing here in your hidden wet bar and wearing our evening wear. You have not mentioned my floor-length Fantastic Four t-shirt.
Oh, I couldn't. Where is it? I couldn't even see it. Were you...
No, I'm pulling your leg.
Oh, all right.
Plus, I'm 6'5". Floor length would be.
That would be quite a shirt. I missed that. You know what? I blew that. I started the joke and then didn't play in with it. You won that one, Chuck. That's my fault. I tripped all over. I killed your joke, and I'm sorry. That was really well done. Yes. Chuck's evening wear is a floor length Fantastic Four T-shirt. That's awesome. We won't talk about the silk stockings. Okay, so while we enjoy our smoke and read Richards in the Fantasta Lounge, how about some fine literature? Now, the comic we'll be discussing that involves Mr. Fantastic is Fantastic Four, issue 178, publisher Marvel Comics, cover date January 1977. The on sale date is October 26, 1976. The cover price is 30 cents. The title is Call My Killer, dot, 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 The Brute. Written by Roy Thomas, penciler, the amazing George Perez. Inker and colorist is Dave Hunt. Letterer, Joseph Rosen. And cover artist is John Romita and Joe Sinnott. So thank you, Mike's Amazing World, for that information. Chuck, would you like to tell our friends in the Fantastic Lounge what this story is all about?
I would love to. After being beaten by the brute, the thing finds himself floating in the negative zone, about to be attacked by a strange, snake-like denizen of the zone. Suddenly, everything goes black, and when he can see again, he finds himself in the Baxter Building, a prisoner of the Frightful Four. He sees Reed Richards smoking a pipe in his briefs, but it turns out this Reed is Mr. Fantastic's double from Counter-Earth. And worse, the rest of the Fantastic Four, Thundra and Tigra, are all captives as well. A giant oscillating fan has been set up in the room, with Reed on the left wrapped in restrictive bandaging and unable to stretch. On the right, a hermetically sealed glass tube holding the Human Torch, who is unable to get enough air to flame on. On the top blade of the fan is the Invisible Woman, held fast by steel bands and one even over her eyes. Hanging upside down on the bottom blade is Thundra. Her arms and legs are strained by formidable-looking steel and concrete blocks. Floating above them is the werewoman Tigra, wrapped up by Trapster's paste and one of Wizard's anti-gravity discs smacked right in the middle of her chest. The brute uses the moment to explain to the captive heroes the nature of his existence. It turns out Evil Reed was sent into space by the military on Counter-Earth during a battle between High Evolutionary and Galactus to investigate and pass through a cosmic ray storm. Finding High Evolutionary's artificial asteroid base, he then stowed away on a ship, taking him to regular Earth. Now on the FFS Earth, he answered a newspaper advertisement to join the Frightful Four. With his origins revealed, the Counter-Earth Richards transforms into the Brute and is about to kill Mr. Fantastic. But the Wizard stops him. Wizards say they will try to hold the Fantastic Four hostage in order to get a $1 billion ransom with a 3 a.m. deadline. But New York City can't cover the extortion money, and neither will the U.S. government. Eventually, the military surrounds the Baxter Building and awaits further orders. As the 3 a.m. deadline closes in, the Impossible Man is watching TV elsewhere in the Baxter Building. He blows the fuse box trying to fix the broken TV, killing power to the building. This leads to one of the greatest sequences in my comic reading youth, one that lives rent-free in my head. Wizard throws the switch to kill the FF, but the power outage in the kills the lights in the room. The wizard yells, "But that cannot be. For if the power is off, then that must mean." And yes, true believers, the wizard's whining is interrupted by a flame blast, and a page turn reveals that the Fantastic Four are free. Johnny's fire blasts make the room erupt in chaos. Reed sets about freeing the thing while Thundra and the Invisible Woman go into action. But Reed's efforts aren't needed as the thing breaks free in a senses-shattering panel all his own. During the fight, an Invisible Woman is menaced by the brute, and a worried Reed stretches out to save his wife, then reacts in pain as he realizes stretching powers are gone. The thing paces the brute across the room as Johnny stops the Trapster and Thundra terrorizes the Sandman. Even the still wrapped up Tigra joins the action as she launches herself off the ceiling to KO the wizard. Brute takes advantage of the chaos to grab our Reed and crash out of the room. The thing is prevented from falling by a face full of paste. The FF finally barge into the next room to help Reed against the brute, but it appears that Reed has managed to defeat the brute and trap him in the negative zone. All is well and everyone is happy. Reed announces that his powers are gone and he'll probably never stretch again. He officially resigns from his role as leader of the FF, but his family won't have it, stating that what we've all known to always be true, it's not his stretching that makes him great at what he does. However, unknown to the team, the Brood has really overpowered Reed, switched outfits with him, and sent him in the negative zone in his underwear. Our last panel shocker reveals that the Brute has now infiltrated the Fantastic Four.
Well done, well done. So, instead of like being like, "What'd you think of this?" We'll get into that in the storyline. So, I just want to go right to the cover first and ask you, what did you think of the cover?
I love the cover. I think I briefly mentioned this to you. This is one of my childhood comics, one of my very favorite comics. I could not believe that you offered it up to talk about. It's what Rob Kelly would call a mountain comic,
Oh, very good.
because I got it on vacation when we were traveling in 1977 to moving actually from Texas to upstate New York.
Okay.
So this cover is brilliant. It's got the red background behind the logo. It's got Thing and Torch in bubbles. Their headshots in bubbles. And every member of the FF is getting a little bit of action here with them all facing off against a different member of the Frightful Four. So yeah, it's a great cover.
Yeah, I really enjoy it too. It has a nice symmetry at the top right area. You have the Brute facing off against the Thing, basically on top of the Baxter Building awning, it looks like. Is that what you call that?
Yes.
Is that an awning?
It looks like a what's the
What?
word?
I don't know. The thing that hangs over the front doors, basically. But it's not like a cloth. It's solid, whatever, you know. Yeah, and then next to them on the left, sort of, well, if we're going clockwise down below, you have the Trapster firing his firing his paste, I guess, at Sue, and she's like putting up a force bubble around it. Then you have Reed Richards wrapping up the Sandman's arm as he's trying to get him with the other one. And then back up to the top left, you have the Wizard flying and dodging a flame blast from the Human Torch, while in the background, onlookers across the street are watching this. So now you mentioned, you see the Thing and the Torch in sort of like head bubbles instead of the normal Indicia, or the normal corner box. I'm sorry, the Fantastic Four this time would have four circles of all their heads sort of flanking the title Fantastic Four, but because of the word bubble, they don't have Reed and Sue on the opposite side. They don't have their bubbles on the right hand side because they'd be covered up anyway. So they only have the Thing and the Human Torch, which is sort of interesting. I thought that was kind of interesting. But well, I'm glad this lives in your head like this. This is the reason. And so basically, when I'm talking to a guest and we're figuring out what to do, and they name a character and everything, I'll give them a couple ideas for a comic that we could read. And this era of the Fantastic Four was near and dear to my heart because I picked up a lot of these issues in the discount box at the comic store. So a few years after these were out, and this may have been my first introduction to George Perez, or very early on, which is why I loved, this era of the Fantastic Four. He didn't really do every issue. He'd like do a couple issues, then he'd be off, then he'd come back. So they kind of had like a rotation of a very good artist, but Perez was always my favorite. But anyway, I'm glad that. And then when you were like, "Yes, let's do one of these," I was really excited about that. So is there anything else you wanted to say about the cover?
No, I'm go other
Okay.
than it has that circular action, which seems to be so important to artists,
Yeah.
the circular flow of the cover.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, let's go to the inside. So just overall, what did you think of this story? When's the last time you read this before now?
It's been a while. It's
Yeah.
been a while. Maybe a decade or more. Sometimes I'll, if I'm in a bad mood or whatever, I've got a file of of childhood comics that I'll go to, and this is of course in there. But in my opinion, this is an 8-year-old's dream. This particular comic, it certainly was for me at age 8, with the Death Trap and the evil version of the FF. And I had been introduced to all the characters before at a much earlier age from Marvel Treasury Edition number 11, sticking out of my stocking one Christmas morning.
Oh, very
And
nice.
it reprints the first Submariner versus FF, an early Doctor Doom where he traps the FF, the Frightful Four story where they're almost defeated by they almost defeat the FF until Agatha Harkness shows up. And then the classic, This Man, This Monster. So I felt like I knew everybody. I was intrigued by Thundra and Tigra, and did they join the team, and are they still calling it the Fantastic Four? And it's kind of awesome.
So the story sort of begins with you have the thing, the splash page is the thing floating in the negative zone. So, and this is what do you think about the negative zone in general?
I loved it. Like I said, I had that Marvel Treasury Edition, and This Man, This Monster, the Negative Zone plays a big role in that story. And then here we are again in the Negative Zone. And so little 8-year-old me thought it was a much bigger deal than it is. But yeah, I loved everything about it, how cosmic it looks. And of course, Perez Starfield is not like anybody else's, so this splash page is just fantastic.
It really is. It's gorgeous, and you have the patented, Perez rubble and rocks and it's floating around, and a lot of guys in their briefs floating in the negative zone in this issue. But yeah, so you have. And then it's called, Call My Killer the Brute. So you have that, you have him, and he's like, let me out of here. So that's kind of the first two pages. He's floating around, and you just see sort of these random people, people or creatures just in the negative zone, just kind of hanging out, doing whatever. They're just sort of standing on rocks watching the thing float around. We're not really sure, are they thinking about attacking him? I'm sorry, go ahead.
They are great character designs for what essentially is background, nothing, no lines characters.
And then you mentioned in your recap the snake-headed guy who is making a beeline right for him. I guess he's spoiling for a fight and going right at him. And he's sort of a like a he almost looks like the his body and tail look like the lizard, but then he has sort of a snake, a long elongated snake-like head and almost like a snake or dragon face. And he is coming. Just floating through the negative zone and getting closer and closer to come right at the thing, and the thing sort of panicking because he doesn't know what to do, because he can't get any. He's floating, so he can't get like a hold of anything. He can't brace himself. And then all of a sudden, like you said, it goes to black, and we wake up. He wakes up back in the Baxter Building with with. And this is where I got the name for the cocktail. You have Reed Richards hanging out in his briefs, smoking a pipe, which I thought was just fantastic. So,
And the way Ben says it, throw on your shirt or and let's go do it. It sounds like this is a normal occurrence. He's got hair on his arms, but not on his chest.
Well, he's clearly doing some manscaping. Reed is, for his focus he is on his work. He's taking care of himself too. But look, Reed, he's in great shape. Perez always drew Reed Richards a lot bulkier than most artists did. Certainly mu much more than John Byrne did, or even currently they draw him a lot leaner. But Perez drew him as this big, almost like, barrel chested dude. So he's got the zaddy energy going right now. He's smoking a pipe, and you're right, I didn't even think about that, but you're right, he's just kind of like, hey, just throwing a shirt. Like does Reed do this all the time? maybe he's maybe like this is helps him think. I don't know, maybe it
Well,
does.
eight-year-old me just figured that that was normal.
You or anyone or like when you were a kid, or any of your relatives, did anybody smoke a pipe?
It's funny that you ask. My father smoked a pipe until the day he died. So Yeah, when we were on the car trip and I received this comic, he was busy filling our 1977 Vista Cruiser station wagon with pipe smoke. So it
I know
seemed
it's
like
amazing back then, you know, like you probably didn't even have seat belts either, but you know.
it seemed like to me like a perfectly normal thing that everybody did, but.
My dad smoked a pipe for a while when I was a kid, and then switched to cigars, which isn't any better. But my grandfather is the one I more my grandfather my mother's father was a forest ranger, and he smoked a pipe, and he really, you know, it was really kind of fit the bill for him, you know, because he was an outdoorsy guy and would have the pipe, you know, and everything. And that's so I always think when I see somebody smoking my pipe a pipe, I always think of my grandfather. And one quick thing, so he says, you're chawing on your I forget what phrase he used, your chawing away on your favorite meerschaum. And I was like, what is that? So I looked it up, and so meerschaum is a naturally occurring soft white earthy mineral that is primarily composed of hydrated magnesium silicate. It is a form of the mineral so I can't even pronounce this sepiolite, I guess, which is a lightweight and porous. And the name meerschaum comes from the German words meer, which means sea, and schaum, which means foam. So basically, it means sea foam, because that type of material was often found floating in the Black Sea, like foam. So it always looked like foam, so they call it sea foam. So there you go. There's your pipe talk for this.
I like how you've carved out an identity of being the expert in chemicals that we put into our bodies for pleasure.
Yeah, I guess I hadn't thought of that, but there you go. There you go. Yes, I am not, and never have been, a smoker of any kind. But
Not me. No.
yeah, and smoking a pipe is not good for you. But it always looked kind of, you know, when you're a kid, it looked kind of cool, or it signified that you were sort of an older gentleman or something. I don't know. I always thought, if you're going to smoke something, I always thought the pipe looked the coolest, you know, of
Yeah,
all
well,
the
that's
things.
yeah. Yeah,
So.
that is true. If you're going to do it, but then as an older person, you think back and you're like, "Well, he smoked a pipe, not cigarettes. So was he trying to cast an image? Was it an image thing or something that he started in his 20s to look cooler and now he's with it?"
Yeah, I don't know. And with Reed, I guess it was probably something, because he was smoking a pipe even in the early issues too, I think, wasn't he? So I was that sort of I think it was sort of significant of somebody who was maybe learned, or
Oh yeah.
professors and things like that would
Yes,
smoke
yes,
pipes
yes.
and everything like that. So like the
Yes.
learned man smokes the pipe while the young punks are there with the cigarettes, you know, or something like that. I don't know.
Can I talk about this oscillating fan for a minute?
Of course you can. Yes, that was
Oh,
next on my list. Go ahead. Yes, absolutely.
man. I misremembered this. Every time I open this issue, I find I misremembered it. This is a full page splash in my memory.
Yeah,
And
I it should be. It should be.
yeah.
It should be a
And
double page splash, to be honest with you. Yeah.
when they get free in the end, that is also a full page splash, but that's just a panel. It's not even that special. Now, I have recreated this scene a number of times with action figures, one time with Lego. And one time I was running a campaign of the DC role-playing game with my friends, and they showed up one night, and I would use HeroClix. I don't know if you're familiar with HeroClix, this little.
I know of them. I've never been like a gamer or anything like that. So I role play or stuff like that. I know what you're talking about, though. Yes.
So little figures of the heroes, and I had my kitchen table covered with this elaborate setup because the team had been captured by Brother Blood, and they had and when I pulled the cloth off the whole setup that I built for them, their little mini figures were captured in this oscillating fan setup. So it obviously stuck with me at 8 and will be there till the day I die.
Yeah, and And just to go back for listeners, yeah, the Oscillating Fan. So the Fantastic Four, like you said, is basically trapped in this thing that looks like just a giant fan. It has four blades, and you have Reed, Sue, Johnny, and Thundra are in each one, and then sort of floating nearby is Tigra and some and like sort of. It almost looks, it's like white. I don't know. Is it supposed to be? It almost looks like a foam or something like that, or something that
It's
keeps her
paste.
floating. Yeah. Okay. Oh, is it the Trapster's paste?
It's the Trapster's paste, and if you
Okay.
look, she's got one of the wizard's anti-gravity discs on her chest.
Oh, okay. You're right. You're right. Right. So yeah. So she's not able to get a foothold. She can't really do anything. And then re yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
I think one of the biggest things that I loved is that each member had their own bespoke means of being restrained. It wasn't
Yep.
was not your standard trap.
No, absolutely. Yeah, you got Reed is all wrapped up. And Sue, I don't get the blindfold thing on Sue. So Sue is basically clamped on like a couple on the legs, couple on the arms, waist, and then one around her eyes. Is that so she can't like focus on something to use her
I think
invisibility shields or something? Is that sort of
that's what I've always assumed. Like
okay.
if she can't see something that she couldn't make an invisible shield, which to me had a delicious bit of irony. The invisible woman needs to see something in order to be able to. But I don't think that would be true in today's version of the comics. But it made sense to me.
Probably not,
But
yeah.
it could be. Something that's feeding her visual imagery and noise to keep her from focusing her force field.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, it could be something like that. And then Johnny's in a glass container, I guess, with maybe just enough oxygen to survive, but not. He can't flame on, I guess.
Yeah.
And then Thunder at the bottom is just kind of clamped at the legs. And then she has things over her, like sort of rounded metal things over her hands, I guess, and they're sort of strapped down too. And she's upside down. I can't believe that she, all that blood just rushing to her head. But it hurts. It hurts my head just watching that. But it's funny you mentioned for HeroClix that you did something with Brother Blood, because the one thing I wanted to mention, and you may or may not be familiar with this, but there is a this when I saw this image, it immediately made me think of the Judas contract from the Teen Titans. And you know what I'm talking about? Okay, you know the trap that's so hot. So the Terminator captures all of the Titans except for Nightwing. And Jericho, who's adding at the team right there, but and he delivers them to Hive, and Hive has this sort of, Perez designed this over designed sort of thing that they're all almost displayed, kind of like this. They're all sort of displayed and sort of a fanned out. It's not quite an actual fan like this, but they're sort of fanned out in different ways and being constrained, however, but. And what I'll do is I'll add an image of that in the on fire and water .com. But by Fire and Water Network, what is it? It's fire and water podcast.com. Thank you. I can't remember our own website. But I'll add an image of that. But it immediately made me think of that. And I was like, oh, okay, Pera's borrowing from himself a little bit. But I immediately thought, but this is a wonderful design and just remarkably silly and cool at the same time. Yeah, and then we get into so Reed is smoking his pipe, is gets into is telling the thing his origin story. Now, are you familiar with Counter-Earth?
I am now, but at the
Okay.
time of first reading this comic, I was like, I have no idea what they're talking about, what's going on,
Yeah.
but let's get to the
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, basically. So
action.
I'm not that familiar with Counter-Earth, and again, I read sort of in bits and pieces of this collection. So I had this issue. I didn't read the ones before it. So is it just this is not a parallel Earth, but an Earth on the other side of the sun? Is that correct? So it rotates with it, and it's basically another Earth, but there are differences, basically, like an alternate Earth would be. Okay. All right, very good. And so now is this a different, this is the same Galactus though, correct? There's only one Galactus. Okay, so this isn't like Counter-Earth's Galactus because he's from somewhere else, so he's not, it wouldn't be. Okay. All right. And so, yeah, he's talking about how he, came upon this asteroid and got doused with cosmic rays and found all this crazy stuff, and then stowed away on a ship that the Fantastic Four, our Fantastic Four, were commandeering. So he stowed away on that, and then for whatever reason, answered an ad in the paper for the Frightful Four. Because the Frightful Four is looking for a new partner. They needed a fourth, and maybe they were going golfing. I'm not sure they needed a fourth. And so he answered the ad in the newspaper, which I just think is amazing that that's how they, that that's how they were advertising.
They
So.
needed a fourth because their fourth was Thundra, and she betrayed them.
That's
So
right.
that adds some dimension to Wizard's anti-women hate in this issue.
Yeah. He reminds me a little bit, the wizard reminds me a little bit of a Wonder Woman villain whose name just went out of my head. Who's the Wonder
Was it
Woman? Sorry, go ahead.
with Dr. Psycho?
Yes, Dr. Psycho. Thanks. I couldn't think of his name for a second. Sort of the same thing, the sort of like this little creepy, he even kind of has the same facial hair and everything, creepy guy who hates women, and everything. He kind of reminds me of Dr. Psycho a little bit. But the Frightful Four, I just wanted to mention real quick. Originally, it was Wizard, Sandman, Pastepot Pete, who later became the Trapster, and Madame Medusa, who was mind controlled. And then they sort of have changed members over the years, including the Beetle, the Brute, Blastar, Electro, Thundra, and pretty much every other villain in the Marvel universe. But so they've had sort of this rotating, but normally the Wizard and Trapster are always in it. And the Sand. So this is the Sandman when he was wearing that really bizarre costume for some reason, too. It's
Yeah,
not the simple. Yeah, go ahead.
the Kirby designed costumes.
Yeah, it's really strange. So he basically has a almost like shoulder pads, and he has this mask that for some reason has it's sort of like Kid Flash's mask where his hair is exposed, except it has like one in the middle, it has one strap that goes to the back. I don't know why. I don't know what. I guess that's to keep hold the mask up or something. I don't know, but it's
He's
yeah.
got to protect his part from sunburn.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, he's got that Norman Osborn hair. He's gotta watch out for that. I guess maybe that doesn't hold up in the sun. But yeah. So anyway, he tells his story and then transforms from Reed in his briefs to the Brute. Sort of like in this Hulk-like change, and he's kind of mad because he wants to kill the FF, but the Frightful Four want to extort money for their release, because they're in it for the money. They don't really care about killing people, and that causes a minor kerfuffle until the wizard kind of calms him down and says, "Hey, let us do this first, and then you can get money for your experiments and everything else if we're able to extort this money." And then things get really silly. So what did you think of the reaction, like after, and feel free to elaborate as much as you want, like after they announce, and it's already in the newspaper, apparently. It's already in the newspaper that same night, this ransom they want for the Fantastic Four, and it has a 3 a.m. We don't know exactly how much time they're giving people. They just say 3 a.m. We don't know what time it is, why this is happening, but they're saying basically, you have till 3 a.m. To pay up $1 billion, which it was an insane amount of money back then, I'm sure.
Well, we know by the bottom of page 15 that it's 8 o'clock because Impossible Man is watching Happy Days. So
Very good. I didn't think of that. You're right. Okay, very good.
I think Roy and George were having a blast with those 2 pages because we've got the Happy Days and then the newscaster. What do you think? Is that Walter Cronkite maybe?
I
Is that?
assume it's supposed to be Walter Cronkite. Although was Cronkite ABC or CBS?
I don't remember.
I don't remember either.
I'm
So
sure.
somebody might remember that, but yeah, I assume it's supposed to be a Cronkite-like character. Yes.
And then we have the mayor of New York. We have Jimmy Carter. We have Ronald frickin' Reagan. And we have Gerald Ford. I mean, somebody was having a blast.
Yes, they were. And everybody's like, no, we can't, we can't. The mayor says we can't afford this. And that mayor at the time, I wrote down, I looked that up. So the mayor at the time was Abraham Beame, was the mayor of New York City at
Oh,
that time. And
right.
but he did not wear glasses. Now this, or at least not normally, I guess this Beame is wearing glasses. And so the obviously having these politicians in it very much places this at a certain place and time in a world. Now, here was the one thing. So they reach out, Beam. So basically, Beam realizes New York City cannot afford this ransom. They are strapped. So they reach out to first they reach out to Jimmy Carter, who was the president-elect. And then they reach out to Gerald Ford, who was the president at the time. And then they reach out to Ronald Reagan, who had lost a primary to Gerald Ford, I believe, correct? Didn't he try to primary Gerald Ford at that point?
I'm not sure.
But anyway, the weird thing about it was that the times don't match up because this comic was on sale in October of 1976. The election wasn't until November of 1976. So Carter wasn't even elected yet. So I guess they just, and it wasn't a landslide. Nobody, knew like really who was going to win. So it's kind of odd that they would do this before he technically won the election, which is sort of weird with the timing. Unless I'm completely screwing something up, and if I am, somebody tell me. But if the on sale date was October 26 and they had to do this ahead of time, there's no way they knew who was elected president at that point. They don't know if Carter had won or not, which was sort of weird. But anyway, however they did it, so they're all kind of saying silly things, and then they go back and the wizard, the wizard's on the phone smoking a cigarette, a lot of smoking in this comic. Trying to figure out if they're going to get their money or not, or whether they're just going to kill the Fantastic Four. The army is at the gate and everything. And then we get to the Impossible Man. And what are your thoughts on the Impossible Man?
Well, this was, as a kid, my only introduction to him. Again, I was like, is this a team member? Who is this guy? And I remember not caring because he gives me that awesome moment. Like he is the catalyst for my favorite moment in this issue. So yeah, I'm glad he's there. I'm glad they played it the way they did it. Even though looking back on it as an adult, it's a little silly. He gets upset because TV is done. It's a sign-off and it's a test pattern. And he's just recently been introduced to TV, so he doesn't know what's going on. And he figures more power will fix this problem.
Yeah, so he's upset because he doesn't know what's going on, so he goes to the generator area and starts pulling out fuses to try to he basically stretches his neck. You talk about stretching. There's the
There
right in
it
practice you talked about like as soon as you
is.
stretch the neck it's too silly, and the Impossible Man's still in the room where the television is, but is stretching his neck all the way to the where the generator is. And is pulling fuses out with his teeth, or with his mouth. I don't even know if he has teeth, but it's also very interesting to know that basically everything in the Baxter Building is attached to one fuse box, which is great. So they're trying to like enter, the negative zone, and somebody's running the blender at the same time and running the wash. You don't know what's going to happen. But anyway, yeah, so it blows a fuse. Long story short, he blows a fuse right as the wizard's about to pull the switch that's, I guess, gonna what, operate the fan? What is it gonna do? It's gonna turn the fan on and they're gonna spin to death.
What else do you want it to do? I mean, that's gotta be it.
I guess that's it. They don't say exactly how they're gonna kill him. They just say they're gonna, or maybe they, I don't think they do. They just say to
No.
him, yeah,
No.
just pull the fuse and spin them around, I guess. And then you're right. Then you get the big hero moment when they realize that everything's gone dark right as he was about to pull it. The fuse is blown, and then you see the fire blast, and then you have, the Fantastic Four are free. In this case, the Fantastic Four is the Torch, Sue Richards, Reed Richards, and Thundera. And then finally, Reed is able to free or help free the Thing. I guess he sort of bursts out of his, and then the fight is on. And you get a couple pages of that. Anything like you said? Now you said that this really spoke to you as a kid. Is there something in particular, or just the overall thing, or what was it that?
Well, I was all about action in my comics. I didn't like it when they talked too much. So this issue has a lot of, let me explain Counter-Earth to you and my origins. And then a couple pages of politicians, whatever, whatever, whatever. But it has that great moment where the Fantastic Four are free and it's nothing but action from here on out. Where they dive in and they try to split up the bad guys, and it's I get a little frustrated with what happens more often than not, which is a whole team against one guy. So I really kind of like the team against team the dynamic where okay, there's got to be a bit of strategy, who takes on who? Because when you got all four of them against one guy, it's is everybody going to shine as much or
Well, plus, you have to be careful when you do things like that. It's the same like with the Avengers or the X-Men or anything, because if it requires a whole team to take on this one villain, then it's like, can you really have them battle Spider-Man? Because if it took the entire Avengers or the entire Fantastic Four to take this guy down, and then Spider-Man can take him one on one, what does that say about the other team? Things like that. So yeah, I know what you're saying, and I like it too. I like it when it's sort of a team on team, because everybody can have their sort of individual shine, or they can work in conjunction with everyone, stuff like that. So
Something
that's good.
else that frustrated me as a kid is heroes with the same power. I was like, Supergirl's great and everything, but Superman can do the same thing. And Captain Marvel, Mon-El, they've all got the same. And this thing, they're like 10 different characters. They all have different powers, and it's just wonderful.
Yeah, I agree. And you have so they're all fighting, and they take down the Frightful Four pretty handily. Reed is sort of freaked out at first. I guess the Brute's going after Sue, but then, and maybe you can explain this one to me, is the Brute kind of goes after Sue, but then sort of stops because he feels it would be like hurting his own Sue, who lies in a coma. So do you know anything about that backstory, or no?
I don't,
Okay.
but I think it's just the face gives him pause. He says it would be like slaying my own beloved Sue.
Right, but
So
you don't know anything about the actual coma. Like, apparently the other Sue's in a coma or anything like that. Okay, I was
no.
just curious. I did not. I wanted to kind of read this as like a single issue, like it kind of dropped into it. So I didn't read ahead, or I didn't, read the catch up or anything. I just wanted to sort of enjoy this as a, because that's kind of how I got a lot of these issues. From the back bin, I sort of got it and just sort of jumped into it, and that was fine,
I did the same thing in 1977.
Yes.
What did I know? My last FF was a treasury edition.
And then the Things kind of knocks the Brute out of the way. Finally, Tiger is still floating around at this point. Like, nobody has bothered to help her out, but I guess she finally gets a foothold as she's floating around, and sort of flies herself like a missile and takes out the Wizard. And then, during this battle, the Brute picks up Reed Richards and sort of picks him up like in a tackle position, and then sort of runs him into the other room, while the Fantastic Four are finishing off, the Trapster and Sandman and stuff like that. And by which doesn't seem it took so long, but when they get into the other room, they see Reed is there, and then you see once again somebody floating in their breeze. It's always Reed is breeze. There's Reed. There's the other Reed and his breeze floating around the negative zone in his underwear, and they're all like, "Oh, okay, good. We'll just leave him in there." And then we get,
They should have thrown him a pipe.
at least give him his meerschaum, right? Yeah, give him
Yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Because that completes the outfit. You know, if you're going to be in your briefs, you need a pipe.
Yeah, don't ask him where his tobacco pouch is.
Yeah, we won't ask him that.
No.
Yeah, you threw me off with that one, Chuck. Anyway, and then it turns out, as you know, the inner monologue, we find out that that's actually the real Reed Richards, or the good Reed Richards, that's floating out there, and the brute somehow had time to beat him up, strip him down, put on his outfit, and dump him in the negative zone before they could get into the room. So there he floats as the brute has, or evil Reed Richards has infiltrated the Fantastic Four. A traitor in our midst is the next issue. So right, you know, you're going right into it. So,
A couple quick thoughts. The backgrounds here are amazing.
Yes, they are.
You never really lose in your head where the action is taking place or the geometry of it. We get Tigra oofing into the wizard, and then the very next panel is Invisible Woman putting him in a bubble, and his dialogue is, "I can't believe it. This time I've been undone by two women." Whatever, buddy, you deserve
Yeah, he does. He does. He does. He should have let Thunder like punch him in the face too, or something like that.
Thunder, you want to get in on this?
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a lot of fun. This issue's a lot of fun, and it's silly, you know, and has some amazing art and some good action at parts. You're right, the Counter-Earth Smokin' Reed Richards origin is a little much. It's just like, okay, you know, we could have stripped this down to a page or something like
It
that. But
is Roy Thomas.
yes, that's true. That's true. It is. But you know, is there anything else you wanted to say about it in general?
We
Or not in general, any specifics you wanted to talk about?
didn't talk about the ads for this issue.
Oh yeah, please do, because I have like a trillion boxes of comics upstairs where we recently moved. So I went on the digital version. So I did not grab my
I
floppy. So
gotcha.
yeah, tell me about the ads, please.
So the inside front cover is the bionic battle of the $6 Million Man action figure and Maskatron.
Oh,
So
is Maskatron the one that has like the
the
computer
yeah.
face, and like doesn't it come with I'm doing this from memory, doesn't it come with like an Oscar face or
Yeah.
something like that? Yes, okay.
Steve, Oscar, and Maskatron, different faces
Very good.
and different arms. And then at the bottom, there are bionic action adventure sets where you can dress them up as a test pilot or special mission outfit or outer space suit.
So, as a toy collector, do you have these $6 Million Man figures, or no? Is that not
Oh,
something?
Brett. Oh, Brett.
Is it a stupid question? Sorry.
I do. And I've got the combination spacecraft and bionic testing center that they made for him.
Wow.
I had that when I was a kid, so I have since reacquired it. And I actually have two $6 Million men, one with a broken foot, but he can just sit inside the play set, and I never have to pull him out. But
Boy, broken foot, $6 million just doesn't go as far as it used to, I guess.
so there's one, and then we've got one for take your favorite superheroes to school with a bunch of Marvel Comics book binders,
Gotcha.
a Bring On the Bad Guys ad,
Oh, nice. I have
the
that. Yeah,
trade
love that.
paperback. And we're going to talk about this later, but there's a Star Trek ad. Join the Dinky Starfleet with the Dinky Toys, Enterprise, and Space 1999, the Eagle. But the best one is it's another Heroes World ad. It has a bunch of Marvel Migos in the lower left-hand corner, and it has a Spider-Man web shooter in the middle, a couple watches. But at the top is the World of Marvel. And this is new from Milton Bradley. Marvel World, be the first one on your block to have this block, the homes of the superheroes, the Avengers Mansion, the Baxter Building, and the home of Doctor Strange. So, do you know about this?
I do not. No, I don't remember ever seeing that before. I
This
don't
is
even remember it from the from the comics at the time. You're gonna have to like take some pictures of some of this stuff to send to me. I'll put it on the website.
Not a problem.
Yeah.
So this is a 77. They started doing these sets.
And this is by from Mego?
No,
No, okay.
the Marvel world is from Milton Bradley.
Okay.
So if you picture a Milton Bradley board game, they had one for Space 1999 too, and I think some other properties. But this is all cardboard where you build your own New York City.
Oh,
And
okay.
they have the Daily Bugle and Doctor Strange's mansion, and they have the Baxter Building in the background. And with it, they had two-dimensional cardboard cutouts of all the Marvel heroes, with a little plastic thing on the feet that would hold them up.
I think I found it online, the Marvel World. Okay, yes, I am looking at it. So go ahead, keep going.
So I was a kid, and we show up once to my great grandmother's house. I think it was near Christmas, and of course they needed a way to keep me shut up and out of the way. And my great grandmother pulled this out,
Oh my gosh.
and I wasn't even familiar with all of the heroes that came in this set, but I sure as hell knew the Fantastic Four, and I believe, and it may be a trick memory, but I think the Baxter Building was two-dimensional and made of cardboard, and you could look on the other side and see the inside rooms, and one of the rooms was the negative zone.
Oh my goodness, that's awesome. So I'm looking at, I think we're looking at the same thing. I'm looking at a picture of it, Marvel World Adventure playset. So it has, I see the middle of it is it the Sanctorum and the Daily Bugle. Yeah, and the Baxter Building's in the back and everything. Yeah, they do have some, they have Shang-Chi, they have Spider-Man, they have Captain Marvel, the Green Goblin. I see the Lizard, I see Captain America, the Red Skull, Doctor Strange, Fantastic Four, Loki, I see Valkyrie, Falcon, Hawkeye, yeah, Power Man. They have all sorts of people. Wow.
I mean, and in the mid-70s, I mean, this is as close as you would get to having toys of some of those
Yeah,
characters.
absolutely.
And as a kid, I had no idea who most of them was. It says all this plus the Daily Bugle and 36 Marvel characters.
Wow, that's
And
amazing.
I remember some of them, like Spider-Man, was Spider-Man on one side and Peter Parker on the other. Hulk and Bruce Banner.
That's so cool.
As an adult, this is right in my wheelhouse for something I would want to collect, but I've run out of room. I'm trying to reduce the things I collect. So all I have of this is the Fantastic Four. I went and eBayed and got the four Fantastic Four figures to this set.
I see. Okay, so you don't have this. I'm looking at another picture. I think it came with Galactus too. All right, I see a picture with Galactus. It has Mary Jane. It has, oh, Aunt May. Yeah, it has, it's J. Jonah Jameson. Oh my gosh, this is amazing. This is so much
When are
fun.
you gonna get Aunt May and Loki in the same playset?
This is so great. This is so great. It's so cool. I would have loved it. I was on Paul Kane's podcast recently, and we were talking about Superman story. And I told him, like, so when I was little, unlike some of our other friends from the Fire and Water Network, I didn't have unlimited funds to buy all these toys. So I was cutting out images of Superman from the comic book, that I could play with it, just kind of, I'd put it on like some stiffer cardboard, so I'd have these little these little cut out almost paper dolls of Superman and Batman and other characters so I could play with them because I didn't have the figures.
I did the
But
same thing. I did the same thing. So, of
yeah.
course,
And
I
now
was
look at you.
six.
Yes. Well, yeah, I was good. Well, I'm talking, this was like, a couple of years ago I was doing this, but that's so now there's a Mego ad on there too. You said, now do you, is Mego, is that one of the things you have? I I didn't recall seeing them when you showed me everything, but I'm assuming you have all the Mego figures too.
Yeah, I think you were in shock, but I did have show them to you.
Okay.
I've got the Batcave set up, and the Teen Titans are at the Batcave. I've
Oh,
got
wow.
the Hall of Justice set up on the opposite side of the room, and I've got every Mego superhero except for Wonder Girl. It's the one that I'm missing, and so far it's been cost prohibitive to get her, but at some point I'll just bite the bullet
What
and
now?
get her.
Why is she? It just didn't make a lot of her, or what?
Right, yes.
Okay.
The Teen Titans are all very rare. Speedy and Aqualad are the easiest to, I mean, not Speedy. Kid Flash and Aqualad are the easiest to get because they have the fewest accessories.
Gotcha. Okay.
Speedy's the hardest because he has the most.
Yeah, he's got the bow and arrow and everything. I assume
Yeah.
Green Arrow. I never had any of the Mego figures or anything. So I take that back. I think I had Kirk and Spock of Mego. I think those are the only
Nice.
Mego figures I ever had. But
Nice.
I assume that like guys like Green Arrow and stuff, people with more accessories or more valuable, maybe. Is that the case or
It
no?
complete, yeah. Like
Okay.
Conan's a big one. Conan had a lot of accessories, and
Okay.
so not a lot survived.
Okay.
But then Speedy more so because not a lot of people bought the Teen Titans. It wasn't widely
Right.
distributed.
Right. Okay.
And Wonder Girl is rare because she's a girl, and who wants to buy that?
Right. Right. Okay. All right. Interesting. Okay. So were there some other ads? We kind of got off on that tangent.
Just your standard house ads with
Okay.
your things that you've seen before, but those top toy ads. And then we have the Incredible Hulk hawking the Hostess pies
Oh, very good.
for Hostess, so that's always nice.
Yep.
Yeah,
Are you
and then we
a big Hostess pie guy? I don't know. Did you like the cupcakes or the Twinkies or any of that stuff?
I never had the pies, but
Yeah.
I loved me a Twinkie back in the day.
Yeah. See, I grew up in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and we had Tasty Cakes. Tasty Cakes were like the thing. So like we didn't get a lot of the Hostess stuff. I mean, I'm sure it was around, but I kind of grew up on more of the Tasty Cake things as opposed to the Hostess. So I'd always see the ads in the comics, and it was sort of this exotic fruit. You know, I didn't really see a lot of Hostess stuff around where I lived. But yeah, those ads are always fun. And I know a lot of the people who frequent the network and everything are big fans of that, and everybody's hoping they put together a collection or something of all those ads. So.
I was just in Lancaster a week and a half ago.
Oh.
We went to the Pennsylvania Renaissance Fair.
Oh, very good. Very good.
Yeah, I saw the big billboard that says Brett Young lived here.
Right. Yes. Yeah. I'm not sure if that way it's a small billboard, and I put it up myself. But besides that, yeah. Yeah. No, yeah, Lancaster is a wonderful area. Did you go through any covered bridges or anything like that? Did you do anything like that?
No,
No.
no.
You didn't drive through any cut. You didn't go out to Amish.
Oh, we were in Amish country, and I said to
Okay.
my wife, Amish stuff is just barely more interesting than sports ball.
Oh, come on, Chuck. Well, I'm gonna have to change some of these questions at the end. Let's see here. Well, Martin Gray will be happy to hear that there won't be a lot of sports talk on this one. So anyway. All right. Well, anything else you want to talk about with the issue?
No, well, just one last thing. The
Yeah.
back cover is Evel Knievel.
Oh, Evel Knievel, I did have that, and that was great. You did the wind up thing, you churn it as fast as you can and then let it go and have this pause and then take off. Yeah, that, and it actually worked too. That was the amazing thing about that toy. It actually did do what it said it would do. So it was a lot of fun. So I think the cocaine was sold separately. I think but
I have the Evel Knievel figure in my glass case,
you?
but not the motorcycle.
Not the motorcycle.
Just the figure. It
Gotcha.
was in some kind of dollar bin in a flea market where nobody knew what it was, and I'm like,
Right.
oh, yoink. Mine.
Yeah, that's very cool. All right. Well, Chuck, it's last call. So, in this segment, I ask my insightful guest, Chuck, some thought-provoking questions that came to me as I prepare for the show. I ask the questions. Chuck fascinates us all with his answers. So are you ready?
I think so.
Okay. Now, as always, with my guests, I provide them the first two questions, and then the third one is a mystery fantastic question. And I can't stress enough, these are not secret questions. These are fantastic questions, okay? So, Sean Ross, you stay in your own lane, okay?
Secret question to somebody
Exactly.
else. I get it.
Secret questions to somebody else. Fantastic question number one. There have been plenty of Marvel characters who have subbed in for the Fantastic Four. Put together your alternative Fantastic Four, in other words, Fantastic Four without the original members. And bonus, give me your preferred Frightful Four lineup. Go ahead.
All right. So I love this one. I think because of this same issue in Thunder and Tiger and Impossible Man, I love the idea of characters subbing in for other FF members. So I gave it some thought, and I wanted to stay in the exact era of this same comic for both groups.
Gotcha.
So I'm going to go with a powerless or differently powered or heavily equipped Reed Richards as the main guy. For some reason, he's got to fill out the rest of the team. And then I chose some 70s favorite, Falcon.
Oh, interesting.
First on my list growing up, it was Captain America and the Falcon, and I loved the Falcon, and I always
Yeah.
thought he was great, great look to him.
Yeah. Now, which is he in the red and white outfit or the
Yes.
green? And what's the other? It's he had one that was like green and no. Okay.
Green, green and orange, but
Green and
this
orange.
that.
Yeah.
This was red, white, and wings,
Right.
and Kirby drawn kicking ass.
Nice.
And then Ms. Marvel, Carol Danvers.
Ah, very good. Very
I
good.
never had a single issue as a kid, but I saw the house ads, and I'm like, I had two issues of Marvel's Captain Marvel, and I wanted to read about Ms. Marvel.
Yeah.
So I've always loved that character just because I missed her growing up.
Yeah.
It was a tease for me.
I appreciate the fact that she's Captain Marvel and now stuff, but one,
Yes.
I always thought she was cool as Ms. Marvel. I always thought she had a great look. I just love the look, and I love the her in that era. And her interaction with the Avengers and the Fantastic, and the, not the Fantastic Four, the X-Men and everything. I always thought that was cool. But sorry, I digress. Okay.
Yeah, back then I really loved the idea of Spider-Woman, She-Hulk, Ms. Marvel, and Dazzler, kind of bringing Marvel around to female heroes.
Yeah.
So then I took a step back and I'm like, okay, with Reed, maybe he's the stealth guy, the Falcon. Ms. Marvel is your heavy hitter. We need somebody hot-tempered and quick. So I went with Quicksilver.
Oh, very nice. Now, I don't think any of those three characters have ever actually been in an incarnation of the Fantastic Four, have they?
Yeah, that's another thing I was trying to do. I was like, let me be a little bit unique here in my
Yeah.
approach.
Very good. I like that team. That is a very unique team. I like that team a lot. Very good. Very
Yeah,
good.
I want to read that.
Yeah. I would read that, absolutely. Okay, and did you have like a preferred Frightful Four lineup?
I did. I wanted to have like Kang or Doctor Doom as the leader character, but you can't really do that. The Frightful Four are not that. They're more equals on a power level. So I went with Doctor Octopus, who fought Mr. Fantastic once in the 80s under John Byrne, and I thought that those two were a good matchup for, when Reed's not doing cosmic stuff, he could fight Dr. Octopus. I thought that
Yeah.
was a neat matchup.
It's visually very interesting too, to see
Yes.
the two of those go at each other. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. And I ca can't live without including an aquatic character, so I've got Tiger Shark.
Oh, nice.
I never read anything with him as a kid, but I always thought he had a great look—the orange and the gray—and he just looks vicious, like a scrapper. And I thought a George Perez-drawn Taskmaster would be good.
Very nice.
Kate
Yes.
cape and everything. We got a lot of orange in our team with octopus, tiger
You
shark
do have a lot of
attacks.
orange, absolutely. Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
what's going on? And I wanted an evil woman. So I thought about Dr. Minerva. Nebula comes along too late, so does Spiral. So I thought about the Enchantress. She might be a good fourth.
Love the Enchantress. Yeah, that's great. That's great. That is a great team. I love these. I love these. I want to read this now. I would love it. I would love just a like a mini, like just give me a 4-issue mini series with these guys and just go nuts. That would be so much fun. I love it. And I love the idea of a depowered Reed Richards like he was in this very issue, you know, having to go brains over brawn and everything. And that's really fun. I love it. I love it. Anything else you wanted to say about your team there?
Nope, I'm good.
No? All right. All right. Okay, well, let's go on. Fantastic question number two. Galactus is here. You must evacuate, but there is little time. Besides your family, you may bring five items from your ridiculously extensive toy collection. Name them.
Did you tap into my nightmares?
I
What the hell with this
want
question?
you to think about this. Galactus is literally going to destroy that entire room. So you
Oh my,
can, it's all
oh
just look around you right now, Chuck, because it's all going to be gone. So I want you
my.
so I want you to look around. I want you to look around and just think, just snap decisions. You know, he's coming. The family's safe. They're all ready. Everybody's packed.
I was under the impression you were a nice guy, and here we are. So I
Grab
thought
five
about
of them.
this.
Go
I
ahead.
thought about this a lot. I thought maybe I'll make a list of the most expensive items or the rarest items. But no, that's not really interesting. Plus, how much can you really tease Chris Franklin that I have superpowers cyborg and he doesn't? So I
The
went.
real thing, if you really want to upset Chris, would just be like, let it burn. Just like actually just take that one and throw it up the Galactus. Say, eat this first.
So I went with emotional, what means the most to me, and in variety. So first on there is Mego Aquaman. Aquaman being my favorite hero. I never had the Mego as a kid. I had my hands on it once, but that was it. And that was the first Mego I got as an adult collector, and led to everything else. So I had to have something from the superpowers line, and I picked Hawkman.
Okay. All right.
Hawkman is my number two favorite character.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
I love Hawkman. I'm wearing a Hawkwoman t-shirt today.
So what is there a particular incarnation of Hawkman you like? Do you like the Golden Age Hawkman? Do you like him as a more like a Indiana Jones type? Do you like him more as like a space guy? What do you like?
The answer is always going to be Super Friends.
Okay.
It's that 1970s Dick Dillon drawn Justice League era Hawkman.
Gotcha.
So yeah, a bunch of those other incarnations really float my boat, but my preference is always going to be for my childhood.
Very good.
So yeah, and then so that's check boxes. The Mego, the superpowers. I got to go to Secret Wars, and the best figure in there is the Falcon. So I found out something about myself. I guess my second favorite Marvel character's got to be the Falcon.
All right. Who actually wasn't in Secret Wars, was he?
No,
He wasn't. That's the
no,
funny thing. There was a couple
not
of the toys in that line, right? They weren't even there, right? Isn't
right.
Daredevil in that line too?
Daredevil,
Yeah. Yeah.
Iceman, and the Falcon. So yeah, last year they did you know how they do these retro miniseries Marvel does?
Yeah.
They did a retro Secret Wars series where they had Black Costume Spider-Man team up with Falcon, Daredevil, and Iceman in that continuity.
Oh,
And
interesting.
they were faced off with Hobgoblin and Electro that they also made Secret Wars toys of, but never in the comics.
That's
So
funny. That's funny.
I enjoyed that. Fourth on my list, I'm cheating here. I know it. It's going to be my Mattel DC Universe Classics Legion of Superheroes 12 pack.
Now, who are this is a 12, sorry, say it again. I'm sorry. Give me the name of this again. I'm sorry.
Mattel DC Universe Classics Legion of Superheroes 12 pack.
12 pack. Okay. So who were the, actually, you know what? I know nothing about this. Can I try to guess? Are these like the classic Legion, like the early
Yes.
Legion? Okay. Can I try to guess all 12 of them?
Please do.
Okay. Brainiac 5's got to be in it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Then you obviously have Saturn Girl, Cosmic Boy, and Lightning Lad. Yeah.
Of course. Yep.
Okay. So that's
Yep.
four. Chameleon Boy.
Yes.
Okay. That's
Correct.
five. Sun Boy.
No.
Really? Okay. All right. Star Boy.
Nope.
Really? All right.
Well, they made a Star Boy figure separately in the line that you
But
could
he's not.
switch heads because Star Man was appearing in JSA at the time.
Okay. All right. Mon-El?
No.
Really? Okay. Well, wow. I thought I was going to nail these. I got the first five right in a row, and now I can't get any. Really? What about Colossal Boy?
Yes.
Okay. Phantom Girl?
Nope. The
Really?
only female figure was Saturn Girl, and not even in her pink bikini.
Oh my gosh. So, yeah, they're like more like the early costumes, right? Like she's in that kind of red and
No,
white dress, or what is she?
they're 70s and 80s.
Oh, okay. I was thinking, see, I'm thinking 60s. I'm thinking like the early Legion. Okay.
Now DC Direct did those in their 60s outfits, so I think
Okay.
Mattel
Maybe
wanted to
that's
go a bit different.
okay. All right. What about Ultra Boy? He's got to be
He's
in it,
there.
right?
Yep,
Okay,
yep,
he's got to be
yep.
in. Mon-El's not in it, you said.
Right, yep.
Really? Okay. Okay, let me think. And so the only girl was Saturn Girl. Okay, so I have what I have six of them right now,
You're
or
missing the three most popular 1970s characters.
Wildfire.
Yes.
Well, I was going to say Dawnstar, but since there aren't any other girls, is Superboy in the group or no?
He is. He is.
Okay,
Yep.
Superboy, most popular of the 70s. Oh, Timberwolf.
Yes.
Okay,
One,
Karate
two, three.
Kid, is he in it?
Yes.
Karate Kid, that
Yep.
should be nine.
So you're only missing one.
Oh, I'm only missing one. Okay, maybe I named more than I thought I did.
I don't think you'll get the last one.
I don't know. Who is it?
Matter Eater
Oh,
Lad.
Matter Eater Lad. Damn. I can't believe I forgot about him. How could I forget about Henzel
And
Kim?
his sculpt, he's chewing on something. His cheek is extended like he has something in his
Oh,
mouth.
really? Okay. Very cool. All right. Well, sorry. We really
So,
digressed there, but I just
so
I'm a
there.
big Legion fan too, and I
Oh,
haven't
wonderful.
had too many opportunities to discuss it, on a podcast or anything yet.
There
But whenever it comes up, I always start blabbing away. Sorry, go ahead.
are three surprises in this set. One is you get a Legion flight ring. Another is you get a little tiny Protey. You remember
Oh
Chameleon
yeah, of
Boy's
course I do.
set?
Of course I do.
You get Protey.
Yeah.
And the last kind of frustrating surprise is you get a slot for Invisible Kid, but there's
Oh,
no actual figure.
jeez. That's
And
funny.
when the set is all wrapped up together, it looks like the Silver Age Legion clubhouse, the upside down rocket ship.
Oh, nice. That's really cool. I can see why you'd want to keep that. All right, so that's what? That's four, right? So we've got Hawkman, we got Mego Aquaman, we've got Superpowers Hawkman, we've got
Falcon.
Falcon from Secret Wars, and we've got this Legion box set. So you got one more.
All right, so I chose my dinky Star Trek Enterprise. From the ad in this very issue,
Oh, okay.
because it is one of two things that I have from my childhood. We moved around a lot. My dad was Air Force, so I
Gotcha.
would l lose toys with every move. My mother was very much, you're a teenager now, you don't play with toys. I had to collect my superpowers in secret in a shoebox underneath the bed. But yeah. For some reason, that
It's
dinky
not,
Star
you
Trek.
know what? I'd have to say if a parent like looked underneath their kid's bed and
Right?
found the shoebox, there's probably a lot worse things they would have found than some Secret Wars
Right?
toys. But yeah,
Right?
go
Yes, that has been noted
ahead.
in before. But this was the only thing. This had an exception in her head. It was more like a model, maybe. I don't know. Or I think she did like Star Trek. She would put it on in the afternoons and we would watch it together.
Oh,
So
that's nice.
I've still got my original little shuttlecraft that goes in the bottom, but I don't have any of the missiles. I've lost all the little discs that went in the top that would
Oh, I
fire out
see.
the front. But yeah, it's a little childhood memory. I've got that, and for some reason, I have a bright yellow Superman beanbag.
A bright yellow Superman beanbag, like a
Like,
beanbag chair, or just like a
yes.
little, but okay. Oh,
Yeah.
wow. Nice.
Yeah. And it's been sewed up by my mother because I would use it to battle my sister with whatever beanbag chair she got that Christmas.
That's funny. That's funny. I keep trying to talk my wife into this. Can't we just get one of those giant beanbag chairs for the living room? And I keep getting shot down on that one. I don't know what it is. So,
Wife is very wise.
yes, she is. Yes, she is. All right. Well, I love that. Well, they're all safe from Galactus. So
Okay.
you've got that going for you, Chuck, and wherever, whatever new planet we end up on, at least you'll have something to remember it by. All right, so here is the mystery fantastic question, Chuck. You ready?
As long as it's not sports related, I'm
It is
ready.
not sports related. Let me cross that out. Okay. All right, so you are forced to live in the negative zone for a year. Okay. Much like smoking Reed Richards. All right. Now you don't have to float around in your underwear. Okay. You can bring a couple of things, but you have to have a purpose. In other words, you can't just float around rock to rock or what would you do? What goals would you have? And do you think you could make a go at it living in the negative zone? What would you do? You're there for a year. What are you going to
Oh man.
do?
Do I have my iPad loaded with comics?
It's not gonna, I don't think you're getting Wi-Fi in the negative zone.
It.
Don't know where you're going to charge it either. So.
I would love to say self-improvement. Because obviously there's no food. I'm going to be dropping weight. I'm going to be exercising, although
Right.
push-ups are really easy in the negative zone. So.
Yeah. Well, you get to, you're jumping rock to rock,
Yeah,
so you get a lot of
okay.
rock jumping in. So.
Right. But there's not a lot there for the mind, I guess.
Well, you don't know. I mean, there's obviously civilizations within the negative zone, right? So you could
That
find,
did occur to me.
you could find things. Yeah.
I could find that planet that the main character, the main bad guy from This Man, This Monster ended up on.
Yeah, not is that a ni you talk about a nihilist or is it somebody else?
No, there was a character in that story that masqueraded as the thing
Oh, yes. Sorry.
in
Sorry.
order to kill Reed. But he got trapped in the negative zone on his way to an antimatter barrier in certain doom. But thanks to an Alex Ross story recently, we learned that he made it through that barrier and lived a solid life on the planet behind that barrier.
Oh, all right. Well, maybe you could find that
So,
one.
knowing that, maybe I'll try to head through there and see if I can weave my way through the anti-gravity and do a little self-improvement or recreate every comic book I can remember from memory. And
Well, that would be cool.
everybody's trapped on oscillating fans.
Yes. That's something I'd like to see more of, actually. Heroes or villains, or heroes mostly, trapped in fan-like contraptions.
Yeah, there's not a lot of death traps in modern comics.
There's not, and there should be more, and more
Yeah.
creative ones, and ones that are based on normal household products too.
Yeah.
I like.
Excellent.
Exactly,
Where's our blender doom?
exactly. There should be blender dooms. It could be, like stuck in a dishwasher
Yeah.
or something like that.
I'm trapped in the bottom part of this pony.
Yeah.
Look at me using knowledge I learned just
Look at
today.
that. Look at that. Yeah. You want to be you're yeah, you can only fit like 3/4 ounce of yourself in there, or like an ounce at most, you know. Yeah, you want to be in the top part. It's a little bigger. And it keeps flipping back and forth and filling with liquid. Yeah, it's terrible. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, that's good. That's good. Well, here's what I would suggest, Chuck. If you're going to go to the negative zone, bring your wife because she's clearly the handy one of the two of you. Bring her with you, and then I think
Yes.
you have a chance. You'll have some shelter that way. She'll be able to build something,
Yeah.
and you'll have a chance that way.
On
That's
a
what I would say.
TV, On the TV show Survivor, you used to be able to bring one comfort item. I would bring her.
That would be a good idea.
She would build the shelter and feed us and make sure the campfire's going and all that kind of
Yeah,
thing.
I'd leave the Mego Aquaman at home and bring the wife instead. I don't know how much help he's gonna be. Yeah. So very, very good. Very good. All right. Well, Chuck, it's closing time. And look, I can't thank you enough for being on the show. This was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. And do you want to tell us where we can find you?
I have my own monthly podcast. It's called Nerd Orchestra. Forever since I was a teenager, my favorite music has been orchestral movie soundtracks. Yeah, so you can see how I had a lot of friends in the 80s. None. I had none. But I do have a strong memory of taping the opening to Superman the movie on my boombox when it showed up on ABC Sunday Night Movie.
Very good.
And I
Very
listened
good.
to it over and over and over. So I don't know anything about music, but my partners do. They're Dr. Bob and Dr. Husband from the Checkered Past podcast, and they both have doctorates in music.
Oh, wow.
So I will run the show. I'll pick the selections. We'll watch the movie, and then we'll listen to a few of my favorite tracks from it and discuss. So when we started the show, neither of them were very interested in orchestral soundtracks. So it's interesting to see how their interest has grown as we've gone. We just recorded the 24th episode
Great.
a couple of days ago, and I surprised them. They didn't know I was going to do it, but I surprised them with a selection of 1970s Hanna-Barbera cartoon openings, all done by Hoyt Curtin, who was the
Good.
genius behind the Super Friends opening.
Ah, okay. Okay, that's
Yeah.
wonderful. That's
Usually we do
wonderful.
movies, so I broke the film format a little bit
Yeah.
for that. We had a Superman episode that just dropped. So yeah, I have a lot of fun talking about it. And it's rare for me to find a passion that's not directly comic book related that I could go on. So yeah, we have a lot of fun.
Well, that's great. And Chuck, you're the right kind of smart because you seem to surround yourself with very capable people. And that's the way you want to be. Absolutely. Again, Chuck, can't thank you enough for being on the show. This was a lot of fun. This was a great comic to cover, and this was great. And I hope you enjoyed your Manhattan too. So
I love being on. Thank you for having me. It's
yeah.
a great show. My favorite part about tonight was fooling you into thinking I really had a floor-length Fantastic Four t-shirt.
Too much. All right, but listeners, in my defense, Chuck's screen keeps freezing, so I've been looking, staring at Mr. Fantastic pointing at me for the last hour and a half. So he very well may have had one on. So, but anyway, no, this was a lot of fun, Chuck. Thanks again, and we'll be right back.
The Outcasters starts a bold new direction by covering Avengers Under Siege with Earth's mightiest podcasters. Outcasters Under Siege, coming in 2026, only on the Right On Network.
We're back. If you like what you heard, support the Fire and Water Podcast Network on Patreon at patreon.com/FW podcasts. There, you can unlock various rewards, including being name checked on the show of your choice. Now, my fellow network all-star Sean Ross has chosen the Fantastic Four, and much like Reed Richards, Sean also enjoys smoking a pipe in his briefs. If you, dear listener, choose the Fantastic Four, I will get you a tour of the Negative Zone, or at least find some fun way to mention your name on every episode. Now, here's the feedback from episode 10 with Ward Hill Terry featuring Nexus and a gin cocktail. Over by the pinball machine, Fire and Water Podcast Godfather Rob Kelly says, "Nice to hear Terry on the show." And I agree, we generally don't discuss indie comics very much, and we should. Once I started shopping at comic shops, El Dorado in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, then Fat Jack's in Oakland, New Jersey, I had access to all this amazing stuff. Pretty quickly, I added books like Zot, Judge Dredd, Crossfire, Cerebus, Twisted Tales, American Flag, and The Rocketeer to my stack. Material like this helped expand my mind and my appreciation for the medium in general. So when some of these artists start showing up in Who's Who, it was a treat. Specifically, when it comes to Nexus, I could never quite get into it because every time I'd read one, I had no idea what was going on in the story. Nonetheless, Steve Rude's absolutely amazing work kept me enthralled. Fun conversation as always. Thanks, Rob. Enjoying a Shirley Temple, Bucky749 says, next time you introduce me, can I be the guy playing the new Shadow pinball machine, drinking lemonade and grape juice cocktail with bitters? No, sorry, Rob already got to the pinball machine, Bucky. Maybe next time. Here's my fantastic question. Favorite British comedy show? I'm guessing your dad's Army or maybe a Red Dwarf or a Monty Python guy. I haven't watched a lot of British comedy. I'd say I'm a Monty Python guy. Keeping his back to the door, Dr. Ann says, great discussion of a series that also completely missed me despite my absolute love of Steve Rude's art. Echo our host's love of the world's finest book, but I'd add the Superman/Hulk crossover and the Mr. Miracle special inked by Kirby's inker Mike Royer. He is so economical, conveying so much information with so few lines. And it wasn't that I shied away from Independence. I was reading American Flag, Miracle Man, the Robotech books from Comico, Beautiful Stories for Ugly Children, and Ted McKeever's Metropol. Does Epic count? Of course it does. I have to respond to the question, of course. Indie team, the Warp Smiths from Miracle Man, Ruben Flagg, and Dana Sterling as a leader. Bands, I am all over the map. The youngest of five with parents from the big band era, lots of influences. The Smiths, the Talking Heads, the Doors, the Police, and Frank Sinatra. It's a good list. There is some good stuff in the comics these days, but no sports questions. I'll answer the ones I thought would be asked. Yes, there is a false start in every tush-push play. How dare you, Ange? No, Mac Jones isn't that good. I agree. And yes, the Sox may make the playoffs and might be peaking at the right time. Well, that one didn't age well, did it, Dr. Ange? Throwing the darts in the back, Super Captain says, the Indies don't make it to my neck of the woods, so I didn't really pick up any of them until some years later. My favorite is probably Usagi Yojimbo. Now that I think about it, I did get an issue or two of American Flag, and Justice Machine from Comico was occasionally available. I think I first encountered Steve Rude in the Marvel Heroes for Hope benefit book. I echo the praise given to the world's finest mini and also loved his work on the Hanna-Barbera characters in the Future Quest book a few years back. Ward Hill Terry has some outstanding music picks with the Beatles, Early Chicago, when Terry Kath was on guitar, Madness, love the Nutty Boys, and Booker T and the MGs. Al Jackson is my favorite drummer. I can't disagree with any of those. My personal five bands might include The Alarm, The Moody Blues, The Connells, Bluegrass Group, New Grass Revival, and The Killers. At least that's my five today. Ask me tomorrow and it will change. Thanks, Super Captain. Sipping on a Cosmo, Sean Ross, host of Peacebound and Down, a Wonder Woman podcast, says, great episode, guys. I love that Terry brought his love of independent comics. The 80s were the golden age of indie comics until Image came along and cemented itself as the permanent player. Your discussion of the dark undercurrent of Nexus and his reluctant heroism made me smile because this is a staple of Mike Baron's work. I often think of what a strange choice he was to launch Wally West's Flash book in 1987. He made Wally a sex-crazy, impulsive, and somewhat unlikable 20-year-old. In other words, he made him a real 20-year-old guy. It wasn't always an easy read, but allowed Wally to have a real starting point for which to grow and gives him an edge that I love. While Wade and John's get well-deserved credit for the Wally stance. Wally sense. I guess Wally, would it be Wally sense instead of Renaissance? Wally sense, yes. It was really Baron and William Messer Loeb that started it all. Playing Flip Cup with the college kids. James Williams says, love this episode. Like Ward, there was a period where I read almost nothing but independent comics. Cerebus, Nexus, John Sable, Zot, Elementals, Concrete, Sin City, Love and Rockets, Xenophobic Tales. Oh, no, Xenozoic Tales, sorry. Wandering Star, Troll Lords, A Distant Soil, Southern Nights, Dreadstar, Gru, Usagi Yojimbo, Shanda the Panda. It was published by Comico. First, Eclipse, Aardvark, or Pacific. I probably bought it all. I would absolutely love if Fire and Water added a show that focused on independent comics. have Ward host it and spotlight an issue of an independent comic and a song by an 80s independent band. Very good. This episode's very guest, Chuck Dill, says, very enjoyable show. I'm really enjoying the format. I've never read Nexus. I've never read any of the independents growing up. I got in a phase where if it wasn't established DC and Marvel characters, I had no interest. I eventually broke that rule for the Star Trek comics that DC was putting out. In recent years, during one of my rereads, I added Airboy, Rocketeer, Zot, Miracle Man, and Mr. Monster to my month-by-month read and enjoyed them all. I love the question about what Terry likes about modern comics. I thought about how I would answer, and it's pretty obvious. Horror. We are currently experiencing a surge in horror titles from publishers like Image, Oni, Dark Horse, Mad Cave, Distillery, Boom, and others. I'm really enjoying these horror books. Even Marvel is dipping in with Predator and Alien stuff, and DC with things like Nice House on the Lake. Watching the game on the new big screen, Edo Boznar says, again, an enjoyable show. This time, I even had something to say about the beverage of choice. Normally, I'm indifferent because I'm not much of a drinker, but I do like the flavor of gin. And should note, where I'm living now, Croatia, there is a non-alcoholic beverage made of juniper berries that is reminiscent of gin, named appropriately Ginetta. It's quite good, although it's a bit hard to find in most stores. As for the comic discuss, I'm another one of those who missed the boat on Nexus, although it's a series I would like to read someday. However, I share the general fondness for Rude's art, and yes, that World's Finest Mini is lovely to look at, which is good because I think the story is honestly pretty middling. And while I very emphatically agree with Terry about early Chicago, I'll stop calling him Frank when he stops calling me Kissy Face, which Ward Hill Terry himself replied, okay, Sugar Lips. I'm not sure what that's about, but that's between them. And finally, over at the High Tots, Martin Gray says, never read a Nexus book, but I was aware of the series. I did read Mars and E-Man regularly, if that helps. I tried Cerebus and found it unintelligible. While Love and Rockets was pretty, but annoyingly smug and also dull. Boy, you and Ward Hill Terry are going to have to duke it out over that one, because I know he really liked Love and Rockets. That cocktail sounds worth a try. Cucumber season's an odd choice, but why not? I'm telling you, Martin, you should try it. It works really well together. All right, that's it for this month. Thank you all who listen. Be sure to subscribe to The Fantastic Four, available on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Spotify. I got the Spotify thing worked out. All the episodes are on there now. And, of course, please leave a 5-star review. Fantastic Four is a proud member of the Fire & Water Podcast Network. You can find all episodes of Fantastic Four and many other quality shows at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Please leave comments on the website. Let me know what you think of the show. I read all feedback at the end of every episode. You can follow us on Facebook at FW Podcast Network, Blue Sky at FW Podcast. You can use our hashtag online, hashtag FW Podcast. I can be found on Instagram and Blue Sky at Imaginate Design. Thanks again to Chuck Dill for hanging out at the Fantastic Lounge. Until next time, the bar is open.